whirling between the columns. All around me, the gods materialized. A swarm of scorpions scuttled across the floor and merged to form the goddess Circuit, who glared at me distrustfully from beneath her scorpion-shaped crown. Bobby, the baboon god, climbed down from the nearest column and bared his fangs. Nekbet, the vulture goddess, perched on the prow of the sunboat. Shu, the wind god, blew in as a dust devil, then took the appearance of a World War II pilot, his body created entirely from dust, leaves, and scraps of paper. There were dozens more. The moon god Hontz in his silver suit. The sky goddess Nut, her galactic blue skin glimmering with stars. Hoppy, the hippie with his green fish scale skirt and his crazy smile. And a severe looking woman in camouflage hunting clothes, a bow at her side, grease paint on her face, and two ridiculous palm fronds sticking out of her hair. Neat, I assumed. I'd hoped for more friendly faces, but I knew Osiris couldn't leave the underworld. Toth was still stuck in his pyramid, and many other gods, probably the ones most likely to help me, were also under siege from the forces of chaos. We'd have to make do. I faced the assembled gods and hoped my legs weren't shaking too badly. I still felt like Carter Kane, but I knew that when they looked at me, they were seeing Horus, the Avenger. I brandished the crook and flail. "These are the symbols of the Pharaoh, given to me by Ra himself. He has named me your leader. Even now he is facing Apophis. We must join the battle. Follow me and do your duty." Circuit hissed.
"We only follow the strong. Are you strong?"
I moved with lightning speed. I lashed the flail across the goddess, cutting her into a flaming pile of baked scorpions. A few live critters scuttled out of the wreckage. They moved to a safe distance and began to reform until the goddess was whole again, cowering behind a brazier of blue flames. The vulture goddess Nekbet cackled.
"He is strong."
"Then come," I said. My Ba returned to Earth. I opened my eyes. Above Khafre's pyramid, storm clouds gathered. With a clap of thunder, they parted, and the gods charged into battle, some riding war chariots, some in floating warships, some on the backs of giant falcons. The baboon god Bobby landed atop the Great Pyramid. He pounded his chest and howled. I turned to Sadie. "How's that for a signal?" We clambered down the pyramid to join the fight. First tip on fighting a giant chaos serpent? Don't. Even with a squadron of gods and magicians at your back, it's not a battle you're likely to win. I got clued into this as we charged closer and the world seemed to fracture. I realized Apophis wasn't just coiling in and out of the desert, wrapping himself around the pyramids. He was coiling in and out of the Duat, splintering reality into different layers. Trying to find him was like running through a funhouse full of mirrors, each mirror leading to another funhouse filled with more mirrors. Our friends began to split up. All around us, gods and magicians became isolated, some sinking deeper into the Duat than others. We fought a single enemy, but we were each fighting only a fragment of his power. At the base of the pyramid, snaky coils encircled Walt. He tried to force his way out, blasting the serpent with gray light that turned his scales to ashes. But the serpent just regenerated, closing tighter and tighter around Walt. A few hundred feet away, Julian had summoned a full Horus avatar, a giant green hawk-headed warrior with a hepesh in either hand. He sliced away at the serpent's tail, or at least one version of it, while the tail lashed around and tried to impale him. Deeper in the Duat, the goddess Circuit stood in nearly the same place. She had turned herself into a giant black scorpion and was confronting another image of the serpent's tail, parrying it with her stinger in a bizarre sword fight. Even Amos had been waylaid. He faced the wrong direction, or so it looked to me, and sliced his staff through the empty air, shouting command words at nothing. I hoped that we were weakening Apophis by forcing him to deal with so many of us at once, but I couldn't see any sign of the serpent's power decreasing.
"He's dividing us!"
Sadie shouted. Even standing right next to me, she seemed to be speaking from the other side of a roaring wind tunnel.
"Grab hold!"
I held out the Pharaoh's crook.
"We have to stay together!"
She took the other end of the crook, and we forged ahead. The closer we got to the serpent's head, the harder it was to move. I felt like we were running through layers of clear syrup, each thicker and more resistant than the last. I looked around us and realized most of our allies had fallen away. Some I couldn't even see because of the chaos distortion. Ahead of us, a bright light shimmered as if through 50 feet of water.
"We have to get to Ra," I said. "Concentrate on him."
What I was really thinking? I have to save Zia. But I was pretty sure Sadie knew that without my spelling it out. I could hear Zia's voice, summoning waves of fire against her enemy. She couldn't be much farther, maybe 20 feet in mortal distance. Through the Duat, it might have been 1,000 miles.
"Almost there," I said.
"You're too late, little ones,"
the voice of Apophis hummed in my ears.
"Ra will be my breakfast today."
A snake coil as big as a subway car slammed into the sand at our feet, almost crushing us. The scales rippled with chaos energy, making me want to double over with nausea. Without Horus shielding me, I'm pretty sure I would have been vaporized just standing so close to it. I swung my flail. 3 lines of fire cut through the snake's hide, blasting it to shreds of red and gray fog.
"Okay?"
I asked Sadie. She looked pale, but nodded. We trudged on. A few of the most powerful gods still fought around us. Bobby the baboon was riding one version of the serpent's head, pounding his massive fist between Apophis's eyes, but the serpent seemed only mildly annoyed. The hunter goddess, Neat, hid behind a pile of stone blocks, sniping at another snakehead with her arrows. She was pretty easy to spot because of the palm fronds in her hair, and she kept yelling something about a jelly baby conspiracy. Farther on, another serpent's mouth sank its fangs into Nekbet, the vulture goddess, who shrieked in pain and exploded into a pile of black feathers.
"We're running out of gods!" Sadie cried.
Finally, we reached the middle of the chaos storm. Walls of red and gray smoke swirled around us, but the roar died in the center as if we'd stepped into the eye of a hurricane. Above us rose the true head of the serpent, or at least the manifestation that held most of his power. How did I know this? His skin looked more solid, glistening with golden red scales. His mouth was a pink cavern with fangs. His eyes glowed, and his cobra's hood spread so wide it blocked a quarter of the sky. Before him stood Ra, a shining apparition too bright to look at directly. If I glanced from the corner of my eye, however, I could see Zia at the center of the light. She now wore the clothes of an Egyptian princess, a silky dress of white and gold, a golden necklace and armbands. Even her staff and wand were gilded. Her image danced in the hot vapor, causing the serpent to misjudge her location every time he struck. Zia shot tracers of red flame toward Apophis, blinding his eyes and burning away patches of his skin. But the damage seemed to heal almost instantly. He was growing stronger and larger. Zia wasn't so fortunate. If I concentrated, I could sense her life force, her ka, growing weaker. The luminous glow at the center of her chest was becoming smaller and more concentrated, like a flame reduced to a pilot light. Meanwhile, our feline friend Bost was doing her best to distract her old enemy. Over and over she jumped on the serpent's back, slashing with her knives and mewling in anger, but Apophis just shook her off, throwing her back into the storm. Sadie scanned the area with alarm.
"Where's Bess?"
The dwarf god had disappeared. I was beginning to fear the worst when a small grumpy voice near the edge of the storm called,
"Some help, maybe?"
I hadn't paid much attention to the ruins around us. The plains of Giza were littered with big stone blocks, trenches, and old building foundations from previous excavations. Under a nearby car-sized wedge of limestone,
The dwarf god's head was sticking out. "Bess!" Sadie cried as we ran to his side. "Are you all right?" He glared up at us.
"Do I look all right, kid? I have a 10-ton block of limestone on my chest. Snake breath over there knocked me flat and dropped this thing on top of me. Most blatant act of dwarf cruelty ever."
"Can you move it?" I asked. He gave me a look almost as ugly as his boo face.
"Gee, Carter, I didn't think of that. It's so comfortable under here." "Of course I can't move it, you dolt. Blocks of stone don't scare easily. Help a dwarf out, huh?"
"Stand back," I told Sadie. I summoned the strength of Horus. Blue light encased my hand, and I karate chopped the stone. It cracked right down the middle, falling on either side of the dwarf god. It would have been more impressive if I hadn't yelped like a puppy and cradled my fingers. Apparently, I needed to work on the karate trick more, because my hand felt like it was boiling in oil. I was pretty sure I'd broken some bones in there.
"All right?" Sadie asked.
"Yeah," I lied. Bess climbed to his feet.
"Thanks, kid. Now it's time for some snake bashing."
We ran to help Zia, which turned out to be a bad idea. She glanced over and saw us, and just for a moment, she was distracted.
"Carter, thank the gods!"
She spoke in two-part harmony, partly her, partly the deep, commanding voice of Ra, which was a little hard to take. Call me close-minded, but hearing my girlfriend talk like a 5,000-year-old male god was not on my top 10 list of things I find attractive. Still, I was so glad to see her I almost didn't care. She lobbed another fireball down the throat of Apophis.
"You're just in time. Our snaky friend is getting strong. Look out!" Sadie screamed.
This time, Apophis wasn't fazed by the fire. He struck immediately, and he didn't miss. His mouth hit like a wrecking ball. When Apophis rose again, Zia was gone. There was a crater in the sand where she'd been standing, and a human-sized lump illuminated the snake's gullet from the inside, glowing as it traveled down his throat. Sadie tells me that I went a little insane. Honestly, I don't remember. The next thing I can recall, my voice was raw from screaming, and I was staggering away from Apophis, my magic almost exhausted, my broken hand throbbing, my crook and flail smoking with red-gray ooze, the blood of chaos. Apophis had three gashes in his neck that weren't closing. Otherwise, he looked fine. It's hard to tell if a snake has an expression, but I was pretty sure he was gloating.
"As it was foretold."
He spoke aloud, and the earth shook. Cracks spread across the desert as if it had suddenly become thin ice. The sky turned black, lit only by stars and streaks of red lightning. The temperature began to drop.
"You cannot cheat destiny, Carter Kane. I have swallowed Ra. Now the end of the world is at hand."
Sadie fell to her knees and sobbed. Despair swept over me, worse than the cold. I felt Horus's power fail, and I was just Carter Kane again. All around us, in different levels of the Duat, gods and magicians stopped battling as terror spread through their ranks. With cat-like agility, Bast landed next to me, breathing hard. Her hair was puffed out so much it looked like a sea urchin covered with sand. Her bodysuit was ripped and torn. She had a nasty bruise on the left side of her jaw. Her knives were steaming and pitted with corrosion from the serpent's poison.
"No," she said firmly. "No, no, no. What's our plan?"
"Plan?" I tried to make sense of her question. Zia was gone. We'd failed. The ancient prophecy had come true, and I would die knowing that I was a complete and utter loser. I looked at Sadie, but she seemed just as shell-shocked.
"Wake up, kid."
Bess waddled up to me and kicked me in the kneecap, which was as high as he could reach.
"Ow!" I protested. "You're the leader now," he growled, "so you'd better have a plan. I didn't come back to life to get killed again."
Apophis hissed. The ground continued to crack, shaking the foundations of the pyramids. The air was so cold, my breath turned to mist.
Too late, poor children.
The serpent's red eyes stared down at me.
Mott has been dying for centuries. Your world was only a temporary speck in the sea of chaos. All that you built meant nothing. I am your past and your future. Bow to me now, Carter Kane, and perhaps I will spare you and your sister. I will enjoy having survivors to witness my triumph. Is that not preferable to death?
My limbs felt heavy. Somewhere inside, I was a scared little boy who wanted to live. I'd lost my parents. I'd been asked to fight a war that was way too big for me. Why should I keep going when it was hopeless? And if I could save Sadie? Then I focused on the serpent's throat. The glow of the swallowed sun god sank lower and lower into Apophis's gullet. Zia had given her life to protect us.
Never fear, she'd said. I will hold Apophis until you come.
Anger cleared my thoughts. Apophis was trying to sway me, the way he'd corrupted Vlad Menshikov, Kwai, Sarah Jacoby, and even Set, the god of evil himself. Apophis was the master of eroding reason and order, of destroying everything that was good and admirable. He was selfish, and he wanted me to be selfish as well. I remembered the white obelisk rising from the Sea of Chaos. It had stood for thousands of years, against all odds. It represented courage and civilization, making the right choice instead of the easy choice. If I failed today, that obelisk would finally crumble. Everything humans had built since the first pyramids of Egypt would be for nothing. Sadie, I said, you have the shadow? She got to her feet, her shocked expression turning to rage.
I thought you'd never ask.
From her bag, she produced the granite figurine. Now midnight black with the shadow of Apophis. The serpent recoiled, hissing. I thought I detected fear in his eyes.
Don't be foolish, Apophis snarled. That ridiculous spell will not work. Not now when I am triumphant. Besides, you are too weak. You would never survive the attempt.
Like all effective threats, it had the ring of truth. My magic reserves were nearly tapped out. Sadie's couldn't be much better. Even if the gods helped, we would likely burn ourselves up casting an execration.
Ready?
Sadie asked me, her tone defiant.
Attempt it, Apophis warned. And I will raise your souls from chaos again and again, just so I can kill you slowly. I will do the same for your father and mother. You will know an eternity of pain.
I felt like I'd swallowed one of Ra's fireballs. My fists clenched around the crook and flail, despite the throbbing pain in my hand. The power of Horus surged back into me, and once again we were in absolute agreement. I was his eye. I was the Avenger. Mistake, I told the serpent. You should never threaten my family. I threw the crook and flail. They smashed into Apophis's face and erupted in a column of fire like a nuclear blast. The serpent howled in pain, engulfed in flames and smoke, but I suspected I'd only bought us a few seconds. Sadie, I said, are you ready? She nodded and offered me the figurine. Together we held it and prepared for what might be the last spell of our lives. There was no need to consult a scroll. We'd been practicing for this execration for months. We both knew the words by heart. The only question was whether the shadow would make the difference. Once we started, there would be no stopping, and whether we failed or succeeded, we would probably burn up. "Bess and Bost," I said, "can you two keep Apophis away from us?" Bost smiled and hefted her knives.
"Protect my kittens. You don't even need to ask."
She glanced at Bess.
"And in case we die, I'm sorry about all the times I toyed with your emotions. You deserved better."
Bess snorted.
"That's okay. I finally came to my senses and found the right girl. Besides, you're a cat. It's your nature to think you're center of the universe."
She stared at him blankly.
"But I am the center of the universe."
Bess laughed.
"Good luck, kids. Time to bring on the ugly."
"Death!"
Apophis screamed, emerging from the column of fire with his eyes blazing. Bost and Bess, the two greatest friends and protectors we'd ever had, charged to meet Apophis. Sadie and I began the spell. 20. I take a chair. Like I said, I'm not good with incantations. Doing one right requires unbroken concentration, correct pronunciation, and perfect timing. Otherwise, you're liable to destroy yourself and everyone within 10 feet, or turn yourself into some form of marsupial. Trying to cast a spell with someone else? That's doubly hard. Sure, Sadie and I had studied the words, but it's not like we could actually do the execration in advance. With a spell like that, you only get one shot. As we began, I was aware of Bost and Bess battling the serpent, and our other allies locked in combat at different levels of the duat. The temperature kept dropping. Crevices widened in the ground. Red lightning spread across the sky like cracks in a black dome. It was hard to keep my teeth from chattering. I concentrated on the stone figurine of Apophis. As we chanted, the statue began to smoke. I tried not to think about the last time I'd heard this incantation. Michel Desjardins had died casting it, and he had faced only a partial manifestation of the serpent, not Apophis at his full power after triumphantly devouring Ra. "Focus," Horace told me. Easy for him to say. The noise, cold, and explosions around us made it almost impossible. Like trying to count backward from 100 while people scream random numbers in your ears. Bost was thrown over our heads and landed against a stone block. Bess roared in anger. He slammed his club into the snake's neck so hard, Apophis's eyes rattled in his head. Apophis snapped at Bess, who grabbed one fang and hung on for dear life as the serpent raised his head and shook his mouth, trying to dislodge the dwarf god. Sadie and I continued to chant. The serpent's shadow steamed as the figurine heated up. Gold and blue light swirled around us as Isis and Horus did their best to shield us. Sweat stung my eyes. Despite the frosty air, I began to feel feverish. When we came to the most important part of the spell, the naming of the enemy, I finally began to sense the true nature of the serpent's shadow. Funny how that works. Sometimes you don't really understand something until you destroy it. The Schutt was more than just a copy or a reflection, more than a backup disc for the soul. A person's shadow stood for his legacy, his impact on the world. Some people cast hardly any shadow at all. Some cast long, deep shadows that endured for centuries. I thought about what the ghost Setna had said, how he and I had each grown up in the shadow of a famous father. I realize now that he hadn't just meant it as a figure of speech. My dad cast a powerful shadow that still affected me and the whole world. If a person cast no shadow at all, he couldn't be alive. His existence became meaningless. Execrating Apophis by destroying his shadow would cut his connection to the mortal world completely. He'd never be able to rise again. I finally understood why he'd been so anxious to burn Setna's scrolls, and why he was afraid of this spell. We reached the last lines. Apophis dislodged Bess from his fang, and the dwarf sailed into the side of the Great Pyramid. The serpent turned toward us as we spoke the final words. "We exile you beyond the void. You are no more."
"No!"
Apophis roared. The statue flared, dissolving in our hands. The shadow disappeared in a puff of vapor, and an explosive wave of darkness knocked us off our feet. The serpent's legacy on the earth shattered. The wars, murders, turmoil, and anarchy Apophis had caused since ancient times finally lost power, no longer casting their shadow across our future. Souls of the dead were expelled from the blast. Thousands of ghosts that had been trapped and crushed within the shadow of chaos. A voice whispered in my mind,
"Carter."
And I sobbed with relief. I couldn't see her, but I knew that our mother was free. Her spirit was returning to its place in the Duat.
"Short-sighted mortals!"
Apophis writhed and began to shrink.
"You haven't just killed me. You've exiled the gods."
The Duat collapsed, layer upon layer, until the plains of Giza were one reality again. Our magician friends stood in a daze around us. The gods, however, were nowhere to be seen. The serpent hissed, his scales falling away in smoking pieces.
"Mott and chaos are linked, you fools. You cannot push me away without pushing away the gods. As for Ra, he shall die within me, slowly digested."
He was cut short, literally, when his head exploded. Yes, it was just as gross as it sounds. Flaming bits of reptile flew everywhere. A ball of fire rolled up from the serpent's neck. The body of Apophis crumbled into sand and steaming goo. And Zia Rashid stepped out of the wreckage. Her dress was in tatters. Her golden staff had cracked like a wishbone. But she was alive. I ran toward her. She stumbled and collapsed against me, completely exhausted. Then someone else rose from the smoking ruins of Apophis. Ra shimmered like a mirage, towering over us as a muscular old man with golden skin, kingly robes, and the pharaoh's crown. He stepped forward and daylight returned to the sky. The temperature warmed. The cracks in the ground sealed themselves. The sun god smiled down at me.
"Well done, Carter and Sadie. Now I must withdraw as the other gods have done. But I owe you my life."
"Withdraw?" My voice didn't sound like mine. It was deeper, more gravelly. But it wasn't Horus's voice either. The war god seemed to be gone from my mind.
"You mean forever?"
Ra chuckled.
"When you're as old as I am, you learn to be careful with that word, forever. I thought I was leaving forever the first time I abdicated. For a while, at least, I must retreat into the sky. My old enemy Apophis was not wrong. When chaos is pushed away, the gods of order, Mart, must also distance themselves. Such is the balance of the universe."
"Then you should take these."
Again, I offered him the crook and flail. Ra shook his head.
"Keep them for me. You are the rightful pharaoh. And take care of my favored one."
He nodded at Zia.
"She will recover, but she will need support."
Light blazed around the sun god. When it faded, he was gone. 2 dozen weary magicians stood around a smoking, serpent-shaped mark in the desert as the sun rose over the pyramids of Giza. Sadie rested her hand on my arm.
"Brother dear."
"Yeah?"
"That was a bit too close."
For once, I had no argument with my sister. The rest of the day was a blur. I remember helping Zia to the healing rooms of the first gnome. My own broken hand took only minutes to fix, but I stayed with Zia until Jazz told me I needed to go. She and the other healers had dozens of wounded magicians to treat, including the Russian kid Leonid, who, amazingly, was expected to pull through. And while Jazz thought I was very sweet, I was very much in the way. I wandered through the main cavern and was shocked to see it full of people. Portals around the world had started working again. Magicians were flooding in to help with cleanup and pledge their support to the chief lector. Everybody loves to show up at the party once all the hard work is done. I tried not to feel bitter about it. I knew that many of the other gnomes had been fighting their own battles. Apophis had done his best to divide and conquer us. Still, it left a bad taste in my mouth. Many people stared in awe at Ra's crook and flail, which still hung from my belt. A few people congratulated me and called me a hero. I kept walking. As I passed the staff vendor's cart, someone said, "Psst." I glanced toward the nearest alley. The ghost Setna was leaning against the wall. I was so startled I thought I must be hallucinating. He couldn't possibly be here, still in his horrible jacket and jewelry and jeans, his Elvis hair perfectly combed, the Book of Toth tucked under his arm. "You did good, pal," he called. "Not the way I would have handled it, but not bad." Finally, I unfroze. "Toss!" Setna just grinned. "Yeah, we're done playing that game. But don't worry, pal, I'll see you around." He disappeared in a puff of smoke. I'm not sure how long I stood there before Sadie found me. "All right?" she asked. I told her what I'd seen. She winced, but didn't look very surprised. "I suppose we'll have to deal with that git sooner or later. But for now, you'd best come with me. Amos has called a general assembly in the Hall of Ages." She slipped her arm through mine. "And try to smile, brother dear. I know it's hard, but you're a role model now, as horrifying as I find that." I did my best, though it was difficult to put Setna out of my mind. We passed several of our friends helping with the restoration. Alyssa and a squad of earth elementalists were reinforcing walls and ceilings, trying to make sure the caverns didn't collapse on us. Julian was sitting on the steps of the scrying house, chatting up a few girls from the Scandinavian gnome. "Yeah, you know," he was telling them. "Apophis saw me coming with my big combat avatar, and he pretty much knew it was over." Sadie rolled her eyes and pulled me along. Little Shelby and the other ankle-biters ran up to us, grinning and breathless. They'd helped themselves to some charms from one of the unmanned shopping kiosks, so they looked like they'd just come back from Egyptian Mardi Gras.
"I killed a snake," Shelby told us. "A big snake."
"Really?" I asked. "All by yourself?"
"Yes,"
Shelby assured me.
"Kill, kill, kill."
She stomped her feet and sparks flew from her shoes. Then she ran off, chasing her friends.
"That girl has a future," Sadie said. "Reminds me of myself when I was young."
I shuddered. What a disturbing thought.
Gongs began ringing throughout the tunnels, summoning everyone to the Hall of Ages. By the time we got there, the hall was absolutely jammed with magicians, some in robes, some in modern clothes, some in pajamas like they'd teleported straight from bed. On either side of the carpet, holographic curtains of light shimmered between the columns, just as they had before. Felix ran up to us, all smiles, with a herd of penguins behind him.
Herd? Flock? Gaggle? Whatever.
"Check it out," he said happily. "I learned this one during the battle."
He spoke a command word. At first I thought it was shish kebab, but later he told me it was sekebeb, make cold. Hieroglyphs appeared on the floor in frosty white. The chill spread until a 20-foot-wide section of the floor was coated in thick white ice. The penguins waddled across it, flapping their wings. One unfortunate magician stepped back and slipped so badly his staff went flying.
Felix pumped his fist.
Yes! I found my path! I'm supposed to follow the god of ice!
I scratched my head. There's a god of ice? Egypt is a desert. Who's the ice god?
I have no idea!
Felix beamed. He slid across the ice and went running off with his penguins. We made our way down the hall. Magicians were trading stories, mingling and checking in with old friends. Hieroglyphs floated through the air, brighter and thicker than I'd ever seen, like a rainbow alphabet soup. Finally, the crowd noticed Sadie and me. A hush spread through the room. All eyes turned toward us. The magicians parted, clearing the way to the throne. Most of the magicians smiled as we walked past. A few whispered thanks and congratulations. Even the former rebel magician seemed genuinely pleased to see us. But I did catch a few angry looks. No matter that we'd defeated Apophis, some of our fellow magicians would always doubt us. Some would never stop hating us. The Kane family still needed to watch our backs. Sadie scanned the crowd anxiously. I realized she was looking for Walt. I'd been so focused on Zia, I hadn't thought about how worried Sadie must be. Walt had disappeared after the battle, along with the rest of the gods. He didn't seem to be here now. I'm sure he's fine, I told her.
Shh!
Sadie smiled at me, but her eyes said,
If you embarrass me in front of all these people, I will strangle you.
Amos waited for us at the steps of the throne. He'd changed into a crimson suit that went surprisingly well with his leopard-skin cape. His hair was braided with garnets, and his glasses were tinted red. The color of chaos. I got the feeling he was playing up his connection to Set, which all the other magicians had definitely heard about by now. For the first time in history, our chief lector had the god of evil, strength, and chaos on speed dial. That might make people trust him less, but magicians were like the gods. They respected strength. I doubted Amos would have much trouble enforcing his rule anymore. He smiled as we approached.
Carter and Sadie, on behalf of the House of Life, I thank you. You have restored Mott. Apophis has been execrated, and Ra has once again risen into the heavens, but this time in triumph. Well done.
The hall erupted in cheering and applause. Dozens of magicians raised their staffs and sent up miniature firework displays. Amos embraced us. Then he stepped aside and gestured me toward the throne. I hoped that Horus might give me some words of encouragement, but I couldn't feel his presence at all. I tried to control my breathing. That chair had been empty for thousands of years. How could I be sure it would even hold my weight? If the throne of the pharaohs broke under my royal butt, that would be a great omen. Sadie nudged me.
Go on, then. Don't be stupid.
I climbed the steps and eased myself onto the throne. The old chair creaked, but it held me. I gazed out over the crowd of magicians. Horus wasn't there for me, but somehow that was okay. I glanced over at the shimmering curtains of light, the new age, glowing purple, and I had a feeling it was going to be an age of good things after all. My muscles began to relax. I felt like I'd stepped out of the war god's shadow, just as I'd stepped out of my father's. I found the words. I accept the throne. I held up the crook and flail. Ra has given me authority to lead the gods and magicians in times of crisis, and I'll do my best. Apophis has been banished, but the Sea of Chaos is always there. I've seen it with my own eyes. Its forces will always try to erode Mott. We can't think that all our enemies are gone. The crowd stirred nervously. But for now, I added, we are at peace. We can rebuild and expand the House of Life. If war comes again, I'll be here as the Eye of Horus and as Pharaoh. But as Carter Kane... I rose and placed the crook and flail on the throne. I stepped down from the dais. As Carter Kane, I'm a kid who has a lot of catching up to do. I've got my own gnome to run at Brooklyn House, and I've got to graduate from high school. So I'm going to leave day-to-day operations where they should be, in the hands of the chief lector, steward of the pharaoh, Amos Kane. Amos bowed to me, which felt a little strange. The crowd applauded wildly. I wasn't sure if they approved of me or if they were just relieved that a kid wasn't going to be giving them daily orders from the throne. Either way, I was okay with it. Amos embraced Sadie and me again. "I'm proud of you both," he said. "We'll speak soon, but right now, come." He gestured to the side of the dais, where a door of darkness had opened in the air. "Your parents would like to see you." Sadie looked at me nervously. "Uh-oh." I nodded. Strange how I went instantly from the Pharaoh of the universe to a kid worried about getting grounded. As much as I wanted to see my parents, I'd broken an important promise to my father. I'd lost track of a dangerous prisoner. The Hall of Judgment had turned into Party Central. Amit the Devourer ran around the scales of justice, yapping excitedly with a birthday hat on his crocodile head. The guillotine-headed demons lounged on their pole arms, holding glasses of what looked like champagne. I didn't know how they could drink with those guillotine heads, but I didn't want to find out. Even the blue judgment god Disturber seemed to be in a good mood. His Cleopatra wig was sideways on his head. His long scroll had unraveled halfway across the room, but he was laughing and talking with the other judgment gods who had been rescued from the House of Rest. Fire Embracer and Hotfoot kept dropping cinders on his papyrus, but Disturber didn't seem to notice or care. At the far end of the room, Dad sat on his throne, holding hands with our ghostly mom. To the left of the dais, spirits from the underworld played in a jazz ensemble. I was pretty sure I recognized Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and a few of my dad's other favorites. Being the god of the underworld has its perks. Dad beckoned us forward. He didn't look mad, which was a good sign. We made our way through the crowd of happy demons and judgment gods. Amit yapped at Sadie and purred as she scratched under his chin. "Children!" Dad held out his arms. It felt strange being called children. I didn't feel like a child anymore. Children weren't asked to fight chaos serpents. They didn't lead armies to stop the end of the world. Sadie and I both hugged our dad. I couldn't hug Mom, of course, since she was a ghost, but I was happy enough to see her safe. Except for the glowing aura around her, she looked just like she did when she was alive, dressed in jeans and her Ankh t-shirt, her blonde hair gathered back in a bandana. If I didn't look directly at her, I could have almost mistaken her for Sadie. "Mom, you survived," I said. "How?"
"All thanks to you two." Mom's eyes sparkled. "I held on as long as I could, but the shadow was too powerful. I was consumed, along with so many other spirits. If you hadn't destroyed the Shoot when you did and released us, I would have been... Well, it doesn't matter now. You've done the impossible. We are so proud."
"Yes," Dad agreed, squeezing my shoulder. "Everything we've worked for, everything we've hoped for, you have accomplished. You've exceeded my highest expectations." I hesitated. Was it possible he didn't know about Setna? "Dad," I said, "we didn't succeed at everything. We lost your prisoner. I still don't understand how he escaped. He was tied up," and Dad raised his hand to stop me.
"I heard. We may never know how Setna escaped exactly, but you can't blame yourselves."
"We can't?" Sadie asked.
"Setna has evaded capture for eons," Dad said. He's outwitted gods, magicians, mortals, and demons. When I let you take him, I suspected he would find a way to escape. I just hoped you could control him long enough to get his help. And you did.
He got us to the shadow, I admitted, but he also stole the Book of Toth. Sadie bit her lip.
Dangerous stuff, that book. Setna may not be able to cast all the spells himself, being a ghost, but he could still cause all sorts of mischief.
We will find him again, Dad promised. But for now, let's celebrate your victory. Our mom reached out and brushed her ghostly hand through Sadie's hair.
May I borrow you a moment, my dear? I have something I'd like to discuss with you.
I wasn't sure what that was about, but Sadie followed our mom toward the jazz band. I hadn't noticed before, but two of the ghostly musicians looked very familiar, and rather out of place. A big red-headed man in western clothes sat at a steel guitar, grinning and tapping his boots as he traded solos with Miles Davis. Next to him, a pretty blonde woman played the fiddle, leaning down from time to time to kiss the red-headed man on the forehead. J.D. Grissom and his wife Anne from the Dallas Museum had finally found a party that didn't have to end. I'd never heard steel guitar and fiddle with a jazz band before, but somehow they made it work. I suppose Amos was right. Music and magic both needed a little chaos within the order. As Mom and Sadie talked, Sadie's eyes widened. Her expression turned serious. Then she smiled shyly and blushed, which wasn't like Sadie at all. Carter, my dad said, you did well in the Hall of Ages. You will make a good leader, a wise leader. I wasn't sure how he knew about my speech, but a lump formed in my throat. My dad doesn't hand out compliments lightly. Being with him again, I remembered how much easier life had been traveling with him. He'd always known what to do. I could always count on his calming presence. Until that Christmas Eve in London when he had disappeared, I hadn't appreciated just how much I had relied on him.
I know it's been hard, Dad said, but you will lead the Kane family into the future. You have truly stepped out of my shadow.
Not completely, I said. I wouldn't want that. As dads go, you're pretty, shadowy.
He laughed. I'll be here if you need me. Never doubt that. But, as Ra said, the gods will have a harder time contacting the mortal world now that Apophis has been execrated. As chaos retreats, so must Mott. Nevertheless, I don't think you'll need much help. You've succeeded on your own strength. Now you are the one casting the long shadow. The House of Life will remember you for ages to come.
He hugged me once more, and it was easy to forget that he was the god of the dead. He just seemed like my dad, warm and alive and strong. Sadie came over, looking a little shaken.
What?
I asked. She giggled for no apparent reason, then got serious again.
Nothing.
Mom drifted next to her.
Off you go, you two. Brooklyn House is waiting.
Another door of darkness appeared by the throne. Sadie and I stepped through. For once, I wasn't worried about what waited on the other side. I knew we were going home. Life got back to normal with surprising speed. I'll let Sadie tell you about the events at Brooklyn House and her own drama. I'll fast forward to the interesting stuff.
Ouch! I thought we agreed, no pinching!
2 weeks after the battle with Apophis, Zia and I were sitting in the food court at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Why there?
I'd heard the Mall of America was the biggest in the country, and I figured we'd start big. It was an easy trip through the Duat. Freak was happy to sit on the roof and eat frozen turkeys while Zia and I explored the mall.
That's right, Sadie. For our first real date, I picked up Zia in a boat pulled by a deranged griffin. So what?
Like your dates aren't weird. Anyway, when we got to the food court,
Zia's jaw dropped.
Gods of Egypt.
The restaurant choices were pretty overwhelming. Since we couldn't decide, we got a little of everything. Chinese, Mexican, the macho nachos, pizza and ice cream. The four basic food groups. We grabbed a table overlooking the amusement park at the center of the mall. A lot of other kids were hanging out in the food court. Many of them stared at us. Well, not at me. They were mostly looking at Zia and no doubt wondering what a girl like her was doing with a guy like me. She'd healed up nicely since the battle. She wore a simple sleeveless dress of beige linen and black sandals. No makeup, no jewelry except for her gold scarab necklace. She looked way more glamorous and mature than the other girls in the mall. Her long black hair was tied back in a ponytail, except for a little strand that curled behind her right ear. She'd always had luminous amber eyes and warm coffee and milk skin, but since hosting Ra, she seemed to glow even more. I could feel her warmth from across the table. She smiled at me over her bowl of chow mein.
So, this is what typical American teenagers do.
Well, sort of, I said, though I don't think either of us will ever pass for typical.
I hope not.
I had trouble thinking straight when I looked at her. If she'd asked me to jump over the railing, I probably would have done it. Zia twirled her fork through her noodles.
Carter, we haven't talked much about, you know, my being the Eye of Ra. I can guess how strange that was for you.
See? Just your typical teenage conversation in the mall. Hey, I understand, I said. It wasn't strange. She raised an eyebrow. Okay, it was strange, I admitted. But Rod needed your help. You were amazing. Have you, talked to him since?
She shook her head. He's retreated from the world, just like he said. I doubt I'll be the Eye of Ra again, unless we face another doomsday.
So, with our luck, not for a few more weeks, you mean? Zia laughed. I loved her laugh. I loved that little curl of hair behind her ear. Sadie says I'm being ridiculous, like she's one to talk.
I had a meeting with your Uncle Amos, Zia said. He has lots of help at the first gnome now. He thought it would be good for me to spend some time away, try to live a more typical life.
My heart tripped and stumbled straight into my ribs. You mean, like, leave Egypt? Zia nodded.
Your sister suggested I stay at Brooklyn House, attend American school. She says, how did she put it? Americans are an odd bunch, but they grow on you.
Zia scooted around the table and took my hand. I sensed about 20 jealous guys glaring at me from the other tables of the food court.
Would you mind if I stayed in Brooklyn House? I could help teach the initiates. But if that would make you uncomfortable...
No, I said much too loudly. I mean, no, I don't mind. Yes, I'd like that. A lot, quite a bit. Totally fine. Zia smiled. The temperature in the food court seemed to go up another 10 degrees.
So that's a yes.
Yes. I mean, unless it would make you uncomfortable. I wouldn't want to make things awkward or...
Carter, she said gently. Shut up.
She leaned over and kissed me. I did as she commanded. No magic necessary. I shut up.
21. The gods are sorted. My feelings are not. Ah, my three favorite words. Carter, shut up. Zia really has come a long way since we first met. I think there's hope for her, even if she does fancy my brother. At any rate, Carter has wisely left the last bit of the story for me to tell. After the battle with Apophis, I felt horrible on many levels. Physically, I was knackered. Magically, I'd used up every last bit of energy. I was afraid I might have permanently damaged myself, as I had a smouldering feeling behind my sternum that was either my exhausted magic reservoir or very bad heartburn. Emotionally, I wasn't much better. I had watched Carter embrace Zia when she emerged from the steaming goo of the serpent, which was all very well, but it only reminded me of my own turmoil. Where was Walt? I'd decided to call him that, or I would drive myself crazy figuring out his identity. He had been standing nearby just after the battle. Now he was gone. Had he left with the other gods? I was already worried about Bess and Bast. It wasn't like them to disappear without saying goodbye, and I wasn't keen on what Ra had said about the gods leaving the earth for a while. You cannot push me away without pushing away the gods, Apophis had warned. The bloody serpent might have mentioned that before we execrated him. I had just made my peace with the whole Walt Anubis idea. Or mostly, at any rate, and now Walt had vanished. If he'd been declared off-limits again, I was going to crawl into a sarcophagus and never come out. While Carter was with Zia in the infirmary, I wandered the corridors of the first gnome, but found no sign of Walt. I tried to contact him with the Shen amulet. No answer. I even tried to contact Isis for advice, but the goddess had gone silent. I didn't like that. So, yes, I was quite distracted in the Hall of Ages during Carter's little acceptance speech. I'd like to thank all the little people for making me pharaoh, etc., etc. I was glad to visit the underworld and be reunited with my mum and dad. At least they weren't off limits. But I was quite disappointed not to find Walt there. Even if he wasn't allowed into the mortal world, shouldn't he be in the Hall of Judgment taking over the duties of Anubis? That's when my mother pulled me aside. Not literally, of course. Being a ghost, she couldn't pull me anywhere. We stood to the left of the dais, where the dead musicians played lively music. J.D. Grissom and his wife Anne smiled at me. They seemed happy, and I was glad for that, but I still had trouble seeing them without feeling guilty. My mum tugged at her necklace, a ghostly replica of my own Ta'it amulet. Sadie... We've never gotten to talk much, you and I. Bit of an understatement, since she died when I was 6. I understood what she meant, though. Even after our reunion last spring, she and I had never really chatted. Visiting her in the Duat was rather hard, and ghosts don't have email or Skype or mobile phones. Even if they had had a proper internet connection, friending my dead mother on Facebook would have felt rather odd. I didn't say any of that. I just nodded. "You've grown strong, Sadie," Mum said. "You've had to be brave for so long. It must be hard for you to let your defences down. You're afraid to lose any more people you care about." I felt light-headed, as if I were turning into a ghost too. Had I become see-through like my mother? I wanted to argue and protest and joke. I didn't want to hear my mother's commentary, especially when it was so accurate. At the same time, I was so mixed up inside about Walt, so worried about what had happened to him, I wanted to break down and cry on my mother's shoulder. I wanted her to hug me and tell me it was all right. Unfortunately, one can't cry on the shoulder of a ghost. "I know," Mum said sadly, as if reading my thoughts. "I wasn't there for you when you were small. And your father, well, he had to leave you with Gran and Gramps. They tried to provide you with a normal life, but you're so much more than normal, aren't you? And now, here you are, a young woman." She sighed. "I've missed so much of your life. I don't know if you'll want my advice now. But for what it's worth, trust your feelings. I can't promise that you'll never get hurt again, but I can promise you the risk is worth it." I studied her face, unchanged since the day she had died, her wispy blonde hair, her blue eyes, the rather mischievous curve of her eyebrows. Many times I'd been told that I looked like her. Now I could see it clearly. As I'd got older, it was quite striking how much our faces looked alike. Put some purple highlights in her hair, and Mum would have made an excellent Sadie stunt double. "You're talking about Walt," I said at last. "This is a heart-to-heart chat about boys." Mum winced. "Yes, well, I'm afraid I'm rubbish at this, but I had to try. When I was a girl, Gran wasn't much of a resource for me. I never felt I could talk to her." "I should think not. I tried to imagine talking about guys with my grandmother while Gramps yelled at the telly and called for more tea and burnt biscuits. I think," I ventured, "that mothers normally warn against..."